Welcome to the Volunteer Youth Worker Podcast. Youth ministries rise and fall on the volunteers. So we are here to encourage and equip you. Join the conversation as we tackle the practical questions you are asking so you can help the next generation know Jesus.
Welcome back to the Volunteer Youth Worker Podcast. This is Jeremy. I'm hosting today's conversation and interview with a couple of our familiar voices. Of course, Sid and Lisette, you guys are kind of the mainstays to this podcast, which is super fun. Why don't you guys say hey to our audience, fill them in where you're coming from today.
Hey, hey, this is Lisette. I'm here in Atlanta, Georgia today.
Hey, and this is Sid, and I am here in Kelowna, British Columbia, Canada. Woo!
Absolutely. And I think this is going to be a really helpful conversation because of the experience that both of you guys have had. So you have both been in ministry for a number of decades in local churches, serving as point leaders in youth ministry, and have done ministry in dramatically different contexts over the course of each of your careers. And so this question, as people can see from the title, is should you do youth ministry different when the church is no longer trusted in culture? And I think, at least for us in the country that we live in, I live in the East Coast of Canada, Sid, you're in Canada right now, this has been our reality for a very long time. Church has lost the trust of culture, and people are very, very nervous and skeptical about church things. And so that seems like it continues to even progress further than what we saw 20 years ago, and it continues to give you, you know, erode a trust. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah. And you know what? It's interesting, Jerry, because when you say, should we do it differently? I'm with you, man. Like, I just feel like, you know, even as we've talked about this has only always been my experience. So I remember even as a kid, I'd be, you know, playing sports on a new team. I always knew there was a phase of wondering, what are they going to say when they find out that I go to church, that that I'm a Christian. And I remember getting through that and then accepting this next phase of a lack of trust, question, even attack. That was just normative. And then getting through that phase to a place of now being trusted again, which was always fascinating to get there. But it's something pretty consistent, you know, just growing up with. And now to actually kind of look back on it and try to analyze those phases, go, oh, that's actually helpful, I think, for us, you know, in the space that we're in, because broadly, we continue to move in that direction here in Canada. But Lisette, when I talk with you, then I'm always surprised that from your work in the U.S., that actually in some of the areas in the U.S., this is almost a new phenomenon. And so I'm actually really fascinated by that, right, to hear what it's like to transition from that to something different. That's, and then now back again in some ways.
Yeah, and right? I did want to say that we'll do this as like a two-part conversation. So we'll handle this question this week and then come back next week, because we're going to hit it up and talk about what do you do when the news headlines are bad for Christians, which turns out seems like it's more and more often these days and all across the world. You know, the headlines are awful, and the stories are terrible, and the things that Christians are doing and that their stories being told publicly are very embarrassing. So what should we do? Because here we are as Jesus followers wanting to represent him well, and our people, our students, they're seeing it on TikTok or where they're finding news and wrestling with like, oh, is this what faith is about?
Hey, Jared, before we just dive in here, I just want to say something right up front. You guys, like, because we've all been, I mean, if you're in youth ministry, you're thinking about this and you're feeling a little bit overwhelmed at times because of what's happening. Just as we start the conversation, I want to say this. I've come through a season of feeling pretty overwhelmed, wondering like, man, what's the way forward? But I've been reminded again lately that God really has got this. He has promised that he will build his church. Not even the gates of hell will stand against it. We've been called to this time specifically to be a part of that work that he's doing. And so in my good moments, there's clarity on that. And I have a sense of, oh, okay, like, Lord, how do I be a missionary in kind of this different cultural context that we're in right now? And I just want to say that on the outset, we're going to talk about the reality that can be a bit overwhelming, but I just feel so much hope on the way forward as well. So I just want to put that out front to go, listen, volunteer youth workers, what you do matters. It's going to continue to matter. And there's ways to do it that's going to allow you to be even more effective no matter what the context is that you're in.
Lisette, why don't you give us a quick story or two of the glory days of influence and trust? Because I think you've had both experiences. You've done ministry in Canada, and then you've gone to the U.S. and have seen maybe people actually at one point in culture were trusting, even if they didn't believe, they thought that there's something good that would come from the church. Is that fair to say?
Oh, 100%. And it's such a different journey, right? I remember, you know, being a youth pastor for, over a decade in Canada, and you just got really good at learning how to dodge the question.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because I was ever ashamed of being a pastor. Not at all. You know, I'm thrilled to be in ministry. I'm thrilled to be a Christian. But listen, I was the same Sid, like middle school, high school. I remember just thinking, like, when they asked, it was like, or if somehow faith or church came up, you were like, oh, I hope this goes okay. Hey. And, you know.
Do you remember the stories we'd hear from some of our friends, maybe down south, and they'd talk about getting on the airplane and having these great conversations with the people beside them about faith?
That is
right. And I never had that experience, because as soon as I would bring up like faith, it was like boom, conversation over, headphones on.
It was over.
It was over.
Well, and that was it, right? Like, I learned as a youth pastor, I always called myself a youth worker, right? That's probably part of why we do that as an organization, because that meant that there was still like a relationship. Then the question was, well, what do you do? Well, I work with various institutions, right? Yeah. Public schools and faith organizations and nonprofits. You try to like circle the wagon, you know, circle however you could. And then eventually, you know, somehow somebody would find out you were a pastor. But the amount of times that that ended the conversation immediately, or people would actually walk away, or people would no longer have a conversation with you, was wild, right? Because there was so little trust for that. Then I moved to the US, right? And I was moving to Los Angeles, so I wasn't really expecting it to be like wildly Christian. And I remember the first time I did the dance, because I was used to the dance, right? Like, well, I'm a youth worker. And I did the dance, and they finally found out I was a pastor, and they were like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. We love pastors. And it was like, I was so shocked.
I have never heard that.
I don't even know what to do with
it. I have never, in my career heard that.
So, so then I started walking around saying like, hey, I'm a pastor. And it like opened doors. And I was like, I am wildly confused by this cultural context.
Yeah.
But I'll take it.
Yeah.
But what I realized really quickly was there was a generation where that sat very true. Mm-hmm. But I would say even for the younger generation, there's been skepticism longer than for their parents, because their parents grew up in an environment where pastors were respected and trusted and very central culturally. But if you've tracked the news at all in the US, which unfortunately globally, you usually hear some US news, you've watched this divergence, I think, of understanding of what faith's role in culture has, what it means to even be a Christian in the US, what it means to be a Christian globally. But in the US, like the picture of that has changed a lot, and it's made it a lot harder to have that conversation.
Yeah. And I think the skepticism that we continue to see is towards that institution, towards the positions of authority and power that that people assume mm-hmm. pastoral staff actually hold on to. It's not necessarily a skepticism about faith, but even in Canada, it continues to erode as increasingly there are more and more stories of the awful things that, you know, Christians have done in the name of Jesus that have hurt people. And so those stories are not wrong or incorrect. They're actually very true and truthful. Yeah. And yet here we are trying to help people see that maybe when we do ministry, we're pointing people to a different journey where they're not meant to be actually hurt, but instead that they can find the hope and healing that comes from following Christ.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Sid.
You know, Jared, it's interesting because I think we're even seeing a shift right now from skepticism to antagonism. And that's another different movement, you know, and we've had some situations in Canada that continue to lead that way. When we think about, you know, some of the horrific understandings of what's taken place with residential schools and associated with that. And so even here, we see that movement taking place. I think what I want to clarify too, though, Jared, is when we talk about how we've tried to enter conversations, it's not that we're ashamed of what we do, and nor do we think that what we do isn't the greatest hope that the world desperately needs. It's that we're trying to deconstruct people's perception of it so they can actually hear it well. That's what we're shooting for. And I think one of the things we're going to want to say to people is, hey, I think you got to really extend your timelines in terms of finding yourself in a place of trust with relationships in your communities. And there's some ways that you can really proactively move in that direction. But we just need to understand that as we continue to move towards a more like skeptical or antagonistic environment, our mission doesn't change. The need of what we bring doesn't change. The effect of authentic faith lived out in these environments, you know, its transforming effects doesn't change. It just means that we're going to have to be wiser about how we bring that into the spaces where God's called us to be.
Yeah, and we're talking specifically about youth workers. So we're thinking about volunteering. You know, you're listening, you're a volunteer, you've got a group, maybe a students that you're connected with, you've got a ministry, and it might be inside a church, might be outside a church, but you've got this opportunity to influence the next generation. Should you think about ministry differently, or should you do it a little bit differently in light of these changing circumstances? Sorry, I interrupted you, Lisette. Do you have thoughts?
No, that's great. No, I love that. I think I'm just thinking about... isn't this a subversive nature of the gospel, though?
Yeah,
right. Isn't this really how Jesus entered the world, right? Jesus entered the world in such a way that nobody knew that he was king. He didn't come in announcing it. And then he lived in such a way that people started to undoubtedly understand who he was and what he was about. But every time they would say, like, are you the Messiah? He would say, don't tell anyone. So I think sometimes when we feel like we have to be more quiet about something, it feels like we are ashamed or we're, you know, whatever. It's not that. It's actually, I think, the subversive nature of hope, where it has to be seen before it can be heard. And I think that's really where the shift happens for us as people of faith, or leading as people of faith in a culture that is skeptical or antagonistic, right? The question is, are you who you say you are, right? That's who that is. Like, that's the question that was asked of Jesus all the time. Like, you know, or he would ask, like, who do you say that I am? But people would say, who are you? I think that's the question people are asking people of faith, is like, so do you actually believe this? And how would I know? Because the actions I'm saying don't equate to what we understand God or faith or hope to be. So then as a volunteer, as a person of faith, as anybody investing in people's lives or believing in the hope of Jesus, it's like, how do we live in such a way that they would see it before they would hear it?
That's great. Mm. Okay, so let me ask kind of three questions that will unpack the ways that we might do ministry just a little bit differently. And I want your guys' perspective on each of these three. Do you want all three, or do you want me just to go one by one and you do answers? Do you want me to give you all three up front?
Drop three up front, because my brain's already working, so I want to know where to position some of my thoughts. Go ahead.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, so the first question I have is, should we, let me ask it this way. Is the gospel, and I think we actually have to, as volunteers, we have to remember this, is the gospel still the hope of the world? Is the gospel message that we carry still worth bringing to all people everywhere? Do we really, really believe that? Are we still sure of that? So that's my first thing. The second thing is how do we need to live out our faith in such a way that our students can see that, like Lisette, you just asked, that it is real and that we actually do care about it. And so, it seems like perhaps the day has passed where we need to post, those Jesus memes on our social profiles that say, you know, if you scroll past this and don't share it, like, Jesus doesn't love you. So instead, what are the right ways to showcase that we're authentic about our faith? And then thirdly, what are the right ways as the, you know, institutions aren't trusted, what are ways that we can invite people to follow Christ and invite people into the institution? Like, in some ways, as much as it's tough to say, like, our gathering, our community of Christians is still going to feel a bit like an institution to folks, and yet that's still what we want to invite them into. And how do we do that well?
So just before we dive into there, Jared, I'm glad you brought it up. I was a little concerned that you hadn't shared that last meme that I put out there, and so I appreciate you kind of bringing that to the surface.
The devil smiled, as according to what that meme said, right?
Yeah.
If you don't reshare this, the devil smiles. Okay, my poor family member that I can't name in this podcast that shares that. Okay, so let's start with the big question. We're volunteer youth workers. Do we still believe, like, everybody should buy into this faith? Like, is it transformative? Is it good for people? Because a lot of people think Christian faith is dangerous and it's evil.
So two things on that, Jer. I think there's two questions that were asked. Is it still viable? Do we think it's still viable? And I want to just say this, that I understand that this is a time where maybe we have more questions than before, because we have access to so many voices. We've seen, again, there's so much skepticism to what's taking place. We've seen examples of people who seem to represent the gospel that aren't examples that we want to follow. I want to say the answer is yes. Like, yes, the gospel is still relevant. Absolutely. But yes, we should also be really discerning. Like, I think it's, you know, we get really concerned about deconstructing faith. I think there's lots of value in deconstructing faithlessness or lack of faithfulness, if you will. So when we see churches not living up in a way that aligns with the gospel, we should question that. And we should be appropriately skeptical of some of those environments. I should be appropriately skeptical about my own journey, knowing that it doesn't always align with full integrity the way it should. And I should be confessional and open to other people engaging me. But the gospel itself, oh, we desperately need the gospel. It is the good news. It is the hope that our world desperately needs now, especially as we're more fractured than we've ever been before, especially as we're more aware of not only the brokenness, but the sin that's perpetrating evil on other people. The gospel is the hope that reconciles and restores and renews and recreates. It's Jesus doing the powerful work that we cannot do. So we absolutely need it more than ever before. But we should understand that people will be more skeptical than ever before, because of some of the places that they assume represent the gospel, but actually don't. And I think we should be okay with that. I think we should affirm that when we see that to be true. I think we should also be humble and confess that when it's true in our own lives, and that's going to be an important part of the way forward as well.
That's good. I like that. And I want to reference, people can go back and listen to episode 128. We did an interview with Jason Ballard. We talked about, is it honestly worthwhile that teenagers get saved? And we talk a little bit about this, believing that, yes, the gospel is still the thing that matters. And we want people to experience that.
And Jared, like one of the things I just want to reflect on again, you know, Jason was working with a downtown mission in Eastside Vancouver, right? Like really tough spaces and so many organizations doing really wonderful work there. But as they talked with the people who were right in the midst of the mix, they just simply said, we are so thankful for all the work that's taking place. It's so important. But if hearts aren't changed and the gospel doesn't transform the person, the soul of the person, so many of these other works ultimately don't end up in doing transformation. They're a really important part of it, but we need the Spirit to change the life of an individual in order to actually see the effects lived out long term and in really deep ways. So I affirm that so much. Jaron Jay was really articulate on that.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, Lisette, so how do we actually live out? So we're thinking about doing ministry a little bit different as churches lost trust in culture. What does that mean for us personally as volunteers, how we express our faith to our students?
Such a good question. I mean, I feel like that if we believe that Jesus is the hope of the world, if we believe that he came to redeem and restore everything that was broken and lost, then we have to live in such a way that we believe it. And that means that our own lives are continuously being redeemed and restored. Yeah. And we're working towards what it looks like to look more like Jesus and to live more like Jesus, right? And so I think, what does it mean for us to be living a life that's on mission, centered on the wholeness of the gospel, which is restoring people to Jesus and restoring relationships, restoring the earth? You know what I mean? Like this holistic sense of everything that was broken in the garden is now, you know, on its way to restoration. And this idea that as Jesus prayed, you know, that on earth would be done as it is in heaven, that we would fight for heaven on earth, because that's something that Jesus asked us to pray. And that sounds like really lofty, and I'm not meaning that way. You know, it is lofty in some ways, but in other ways, it's so practical. It's like, how do you live out the fruits of the Spirit? How do you be kind to people? How do you love your neighbor? How do you show people that you're generous and you believe in every human is created in the image of God? And if you live in such a way, there's no way that that doesn't change people and impact people. There's just no way.
You know, Lisette, we were talking about this in one of our classes a little while ago, you know, probably 20, 30 years ago. If I went to a kid and said, there's a God, they'd say, prove it, right? And we'd have to walk through all the proofs. Do you know what I mean? I'd bust out evidence that demands a verdict and we'd lay it out there. But nowadays, when we go to a kid and say, hey, there's a God, their response isn't prove it. It's like, well, what difference does it make? Like, my home is totally screwed. Like, is this going to help there? Do you know what I mean? Like, I've got so much anxiety and fear. You know, how does that, what difference does it make there? And the place they're looking to find that question answered is in how the most significant older people live their lives. Like, what difference is it making in your life? Is God's way not just right? Is it also good? And I see that by how it's affecting you. So again, I think as a volunteer leader, like we play, our lives are the most significant apologetic for the gospel, if you will. And we need to embrace the good work of the gospel, and we have to wrestle with that ourselves. So I love so much what you're saying there. I think it's so important.
Let's try and get really practical for people, because I think it's easy for us to position ourselves because we're leaders and we're trying to keep this conversation going. It's a small group and we're trying to make sure, like, hey, you know, you got to pay attention to this question and quiet down and you guys should all follow Jesus. And didn't you hear what he said up there? Like, you need to stop, you know, vaping in the back or whatever it is you're trying to convince them to do, right? Like, that ends up being the position that sometimes as volunteers we can get you know, position into. And yet there's what you guys are saying is kind of like this 1 Corinthians 11, you know, and you should imitate me as I imitate Christ, this call from Paul. And so when we imitate Christ, what are practical ways that we can kind of show that to students? Is there some certain transparency or some language? I think about, you know, Dave Ron, wrote about using the name of Jesus in real conversation, not from quoting a scripture verse, but just being able to say like, yeah, it might, you know, quiet time this week. And I was thinking about how Jesus did this work in my life and I was thanking him for it. Yeah. You know, it was like 5 years ago or, you know, this week. And I was realizing I was short with somebody. And so I had to ask for forgiveness from them. And from, so like, are there specific ways that we can kind of showcase that to students that you might offer?
Yeah, just yep. Like you just said. Right? Okay. Like actually, like I just think for kids to see your life and for you to live it out in such a way that they can see it. Like, oh gosh, I ran into somebody experiencing homelessness. I had this conversation. I felt like I saw Jesus in the middle of that, right? It shows like a kindness, an authentic journey. Hey, I was really short with my kids. I had to ask my kids for forgiveness. That wasn't the way I should have handled that, right? Hey, you know, this happened in the media. It made me wonder about the church too this week. But you know what? It did make me wonder about Jesus. And I wonder how we keep the church better for you, for me. Do you know what I mean? And I think just saying it's okay, like no topic is off topic because it never was with Jesus. But how do we keep Jesus central to that? And how do we keep him central to how we live?
Yeah. And I think part of that too, like Lisette, when we did that research project, Hemorrhaging Faith, a number of years ago, just in terms of what are the drivers and barriers to long-term faith, one of the things that was significant is if a young person could say they actually experienced Jesus, right, in their life at some point, that was really powerful. And I think as leaders, what we get to do is we get to, we should be like open in modeling our experience with Jesus, and we should actually help kids process their experiences by giving them that lens of the gospel in terms of, oh, this is how Jesus is with you here, or I see Jesus at work in you in this way. So it's almost like we have like this prophetic voice in their lives, helping them see where God is at work, and we get to help reveal that to them so they can actually experience that person and work of Jesus Christ on the daily in the way that he actually is working. And I think that's a really powerful and important voice that we play with our kids. Hey, Jared, there's something else really practical I was thinking about just in terms of like in our cultural context, and this might not quite fit here, so then you'll cut it out. But I was thinking about like parents, for instance, when we're in a culture where the church is really valued and we are working, say, for the church as a volunteer, then like if we're connecting with the kids of parents who value that, they're just super excited that someone from the church is connecting with their kids. That's different these days. We don't get to assume on that. So what that means for me is the need to be communicating with parents, the need to be connecting with them and introducing ourselves to parents, the need to be asking for permission from parents to connect with their kids, being really clear on how we're aware of the need for real safety and integrity and the things we've put in place for that. All of those things are really important, especially in a skeptical environment. If we want to have the right to influence children, we really need to think about how we're bridging through parents and those or guardians in those experiences as well. And then the other place it starts making a difference for me is actually on school campuses. So it, you know, I grew up knowing that I really couldn't enter a school campus as a minister, you know, coming there to do spiritual formation. That was pretty clear to me. I could be there as a relational support for kids, or better yet, I could simply be there to support the school. And that meant I had to honor the commitment to serving the school in the way that they asked me to and not paint outside those lines. And then trust that over time, you know, as credibility was earned in that space, there would be other opportunities for me to like articulate, you know, what I was representing in those moments. So again, I think there's some people might see some of those things as compromise. I'll give you a specific example. I coach basketball. And so the school allows me to coach basketball because I care for kids and I'm present with kids and I consistently show up and I try to represent the school really, really well. If I start preaching to those kids while I'm coaching basketball, I lose the right to be present. But my life does preach, and it's going to lead opportunities in other spaces when I'm not underneath that authority or that trust, where I will be able to articulate, and I got to trust God that he's going to provide those ways for me. So being good citizens, good people in the community is really important for us to earn the trust to be able to do the gospel work that God's calling us to do. And those are just a couple of examples that I'm thinking about specifically.
Those are a big deal, though.
Yeah, and that's where we wanted to end, Sid, is thinking about how we're inviting students into faith. And I think the bottom line that I'm hearing from you is to be transparent about the work that we're doing. Be transparent with families, be transparent with parents, with guardians, whoever, you know, students are connected to. Make sure that there's no secrets. Everything's wide in the open. It's going to keep you safe. It's going to help build the trust capital that you're going to need. And so no longer just being able to text. This is probably bad anyways to begin with. But, you know, there's a day when maybe you could send a message to a student, hey, let me grab you for lunch and like, let's just connect and not give anybody notice that you're going to do it and like pick them up from school and take them out and bring them back. It's like, no. Now there's a ton of extra communication that should be happening, but that's okay. And it's not going to, I think, hinder ministry. It's going to actually open more doors and be actually really life-giving. So are there other things that we need to be considering, Lisette, or practices that we need to shift as we lose trust, but we still want to invite students into faith?
Yeah, I mean, I think integrity is everything, right? So we're talking about authenticity, and I think integrity, right? It's that your life is consistently the same. You are who you say you are. You function the way you say you're going to function, right? And that needs to be true on social media. It needs to be true in how you work at work. It needs to be, because I think where you lose trust is when people don't, well, like that, right? They don't trust you're the same everywhere, or they ever get to find out that you're not. And I think that's such a big deal when you think about parents, you think about communities, you think about all those things. And I think the other thing that just comes to mind when I'm thinking about like who Jesus is and who the church is, I think there's something to about how we choose to speak about that. And I think we have to be really thoughtful about this, especially in this season, as we're just watching things come up over and over and over and over. And there's this distrust for who both Jesus and the institution are, is how do we model that we trust those things and still believe in them, even though we have to maybe choose to not trust certain leaders and institutions or certain specific institutions? Like, when do we talk big C, little C? You know what I mean? And how do we be mindful to help kids make sure that we point them to a faith in Jesus, not faith in a person, right? Even though we are the people that will point them towards Jesus, right? And so that's the trick, right? We all follow someone. We saw that all throughout scripture, right? We know that there were people who followed Paul and people who followed Peter, people who followed different people, like they were disciples thereof. There are people that are your disciples as a volunteer, but how do you make sure you keep pointing them towards Jesus? So even when we stumble, and we all do, they don't lose hope in the real thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a long journey to hopefully delineate for people that not all churches are like that church and not all pastors are like that pastor. And we have to own the fact that that stuff has happened. And hopefully, you know, I know you guys have heard like the Sweeney Todd example. He's a barber that, you know, murdered his people that came in to get their haircuts. But that doesn't mean that just because that happens that all barbers are awful and you'd stop getting haircuts. Like there's a hopefully a distinction that we can help people make to recognize that we're going to own when this has been wrong and this has been bad. But that doesn't have to be the experience of everybody. And that doesn't have to be every single leader. And so let's try to fight for as much integrity as we can to represent things well. So I've heard you guys say, you know, should we do ministry different when the church is no longer trusted in culture? The answer is yes, because we believe that the gospel still matters and it's deeply important for students. And so because of that, we need to be really thoughtful about how we live out our faith for our students. It has to be honest. It has to be real. It has to be transparent. And so we have to think about that. It can't just be done from a position of power. Hey, you should come and be a Christian. Instead, it's no, watch as I follow Christ and how this makes a difference for me. You're invited in. And then we still want to invite them into faith and into the ministries that we're a part of. And so let's do that with an openness and a transparency that allows people to see that we're being honest. And it might take a while for them to trust and to come and to be a part of things. But it will be at that point, hopefully, enough trust that that we can actually journey over the long haul. As volunteers, this is a big ask, but I think it's worthwhile. And even in the midst of shifting culture, the work that I think volunteers do matters so greatly for the future of the church and the future of, you know, faith in our countries, wherever you're listening from. So please stick with it. Before we let you go, and I know we're going to want people back next week for that big conversation, I'll give last words to you, Sid, and then to you, Lisette. What do you guys want to say to folks as they're processing this?
Yeah, I just think again, Jer, like, man, what you do volunteers matters so much, like so very much. I believe it more now than I ever have before. Your life is the most important thing that you bring to the table in terms of a life that's been shaped by Jesus and continues to follow hard after Jesus. And so don't think that that's not significant. And we know that the environments are complex. God's called you to this time. Honestly, he promises that he'll provide us what we need to do the work he's asking us to do. So we lean into that truth and we continue to fight to take the next step and be faithful. And man, he's at work. Like, he's just at work.
There are young people watching your life saying, because you believe, they have hope. And so keep fighting the good fight. Keep leaning in. What you do matters more than you may ever know.
I love it. All right, friends, we'll hope to see you back next week for another episode of the Volunteer Youth Worker Podcast. Until then, if you want to reach out, by all means, we would love to hear from you. We drop our information in the show notes so you can let us know if there's a question you want us to tackle and anything that you want to chat with us about. We would love to hear from you. Hope you have a great week and know that you're making an eternal difference.